Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Wednesday, July 23rd. I'm Nat Cardos, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, the Orleans Complex fire hits 18,474 acres in weather updates from the National Weather Service. Humble enters historic Potter Valley Project Pact. And Save California Salmon hosts annual Trinity River cleanup in Hoopa, July 26. So stay tuned. News on those stories and more coming up.
Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkiyon, Wailaki, Wiyot, Wilcut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection these tribes have to this region.
Firefighter crews have been successful with line construction in keeping the fire within containment lines along the Salmon River Road today, July 23rd at the Butler Fire. More containment is expected to be added soon from Draw Point 3 to Nordheimer Creek. Today, crews will actively reinforce and strengthen containment lines. The Butler Fire is currently 18,474 acres and at 9% containment, and the Red Fire is currently at 116 acres at 80% containment. There are currently 1,646 personnel on scene. Planning Operations Section Chief Leif Matheson gives an update on the Orleans Complex from the Six Rivers National Forest Facebook news release on today's overview of activity of both fires, status, and plans for today and going forward.
So starting around here in Division Alpha, a lot of good work yesterday from the Alpha X-ray break along the road system into Nordheimer. As you'll notice on the map this morning, we've drawn black on the map. They're really feeling really good about the containment in there. As we move across through Nordheimer and this left side of this large slop over, starting from Quail Flat, working up to Hog, they've been in there with crews with direct line construction. There are a couple sections that are still problematic with some snags. They're working through that today. But a lot of good work in there, a lot of direct line construction. From Hog up the ridge towards the Yellow Jacket and DP9, direct hand line construction in there, and they're reinforcing with hose lays. Coming around from Yellow Jacket, the fire that had slopped into Murderer's Gulch and all the way down to the Sawyer's Bar Road, they had direct handline construction in there yesterday, so most of that work has been completed, and they're going to be in there today just reinforcing that, mopping it up, securing the edges they work. Coming around from down the Sawyer's Bar Road back to Forks of the Salmon, fire is holding on the road system there. That's starting to back in nicely and cool off, so they're really happy with the work that's going on in there. They did do a little bit of tactical firing along the to bring the fire down a little bit closer to the road last night. Those operations went well. They had a really long burn window until 3 or 4 o'clock this morning, so things are looking good in there. As you come around into Division Golf, crews last night continued firing across the top. They did some aerial ignition across the top, and then there's a large unburned pocket in here that they started to fill in as well. So that fire has not made it all the way down to the Cecilville Road, but it's backing down, cruising in there today. We have folks spread out along the road holding that operation, and then if conditions are favorable, they may continue some tactical firing operations to keep that line straight and have it backing down to the road. Out here in Godfrey structure today, crews continue to work in there. They have flagged the escape route out, so everybody knows the route out through the Grasshopper Picayune Road. They're going to be in there. They've made contact with a lot of the homeowners and continue to do what they can for structure protection, setting up pumps and sprinklers and things like that. So definitely have folks in there again today. They are continuing this work up here on Hoteling Ridge. They were able to get some dozer line completed from DP-24 down through DP-23 in and around to the Cecilville Road. So that work is complete, and they're going to continue opening that ridge line up towards the top as a contingency if this doesn't hold here. Division Hotel and Tango have been pretty static for the last several days. The fire that has made it up to the dozer line has been mopped up, and the movement up towards the dozer line has been very slow. Not a lot of activity on it. They're just up there monitoring. The prep work on the dozer lines, the hose lays that they can get put in has been done, and now they're just ready to receive the fire. Moving around into down Butler Creek and back into X-ray, all that stuff around Butler structures are looking really good. The spot fire that we had 4 days ago now has been mopped up. And I believe this morning they're going to start to pull the hose and pull the pumps that are in there. We do continue to have a contingency branch out to the east of the fire. They've completed some work from Eddy Gulch Lookout back down towards the Sawyers Bar Road going north, and they're going to begin work from the Eddy Gulch Lookout working south across that road system and the ridge lines that will ultimately end up down towards Cecilville.
Siskiyou County Sheriff's Office expanded its evacuation orders July 22nd, and the Siskiyou Office of Emergency Services has established a dedicated phone number to assist people with their evacuation needs, 530-340-3539. There are zones under an evacuation warning, where residents are advised to be prepared to evacuate if conditions become more threatening. The latest evacuation information can be found at protect.genesis.com. That's protect.genasys.com. Incident meteorologist James White from the National Weather Service gives a weather update and a forecast for the Orleans Complex via the Six Rivers National Forest Facebook page.
Talking a little bit about the weather we've seen over the past 24 hours, we were talking about that threat of lightning and thunderstorms yesterday, and it was right on that knife's edge. You know, it could fall either way, either no storms or get some storms. We did get some pretty ominous cumulus clouds in the hills and ridges all around the fire area, but the good news is none of them developed into thunderstorms. That was great news for yesterday. That said, we're not quite out of the woods yet in terms of thunderstorms. That potential and the pattern that's creating them is going to continue through the week here. Today, we don't have much of a risk. There is some potential. You know, the moisture is still there, but even looking outside this morning, there's not as much buildup as there was yesterday. And the vast majority of models show any thunderstorms that do form staying well east of our fire area. We do have concern over the next couple days, though. The National Weather Service in Eureka and Medford have both issued fire weather watches for the area for abundant dry lightning and thunderstorms. And that's for Thursday, so that would be tomorrow. Thursday does show better potential for thunderstorms in general over the widespread area. Those thunderstorms could be dry and wet, you know, potentially dropping maybe quarter, half inch of rain within their cores, but still area around them where lightning could fall where they'd be mostly dry, along with gusty outflow winds that could impact the fire area. So that's what we'll be watching very closely over the next 24 hours. Again, thunderstorms are always a chance. They may or may not happen, or they may happen far away from the fire area. It's no guarantee. So that's why it's something we watch closely, and if we do see that threat materialize, we get word out to the line so firefighters can respond for both public and their safety. That thunderstorm threat is going to perhaps continue as late as Saturday. It looks like that pattern's kind of extending a little bit. The details further out are more uncertain, but Thursday is our primary period of concern at the moment. Moving beyond thunderstorms, looking at some of the other variables, that air that we have trapped in here, you know, is really moist and cool there back on Monday. As we move through, that air is pretty quickly acclimatized to our drier, warmer interior conditions. It did so yesterday. Our highs were just around 90. Minimum RH was closer to around 30%. We're continuing to just ever so slightly warm and dry today. Those temperatures increasing in the mid-90s, those RHs closer to the upper teens or lower 20% range. Our main concern beyond thunderstorms just continues to be that really persistent and resilient valley wind that we see every day. Some gusts swirling, especially around the forks, maybe 20, 25 miles an hour. That's been really consistent every day. It's going to continue to be so, regardless of whether thunderstorms are here or not. Beyond that, those RH and temperature conditions are going to stay pretty similar through the week. You know, little ups and downs, depending if we get some thunderstorm cloud cover or other conditions, but no big heat waves. As we do leave this kind of thunderstorm period, there's potential for a modest, moderate heat wave early next week, but nothing like what this area saw last week with temperatures well above 100. So we make it through the thunderstorms, and the weather looks pretty normal for our time of year.
From the Siskiyou County Office of Emergency Services, if you are in an evacuation order zone, leave immediately. This lawful order is not only to protect your life, but the lives of firefighters, law enforcement, and emergency medical personnel. Conditions are subject to change at any time. Visit protect.genesis.com, that's protect.genasys.com, or kmud.org under the Fire Resources tab. KMUD will continue to bring updates as they come. Humboldt County has signed on to an agreement that includes dam removals and creates a new, less impactful system for diverting Eel River water, Daniel Mintz reports.
The various and contradicting interests surrounding the Potter Valley project are meshed in an agreement that Humboldt County has signed on to. Many years in the making, the agreement unites water users in Mendocino and Sonoma counties with environmental groups, tribes, and Humboldt County on a plan to manage Eel River water diversion and habitat restoration. Approved by Humboldt's Board of Supervisors at its July 22nd meeting, the agreement charts the removal of Scott Dam and Cape Horn Dam, as well as continuation of water diversion through a new facility that will be built and operated by a new joint powers authority. PG&E now operates the Potter Valley project, but is getting out of it and will submit a decommissioning plan to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission by July 29th. The agreement supports a transfer of PG&E's water rights to the Round Valley Tribe, which will lease the rights to the new JPA. Lease payments will be used to create an Eel River Restoration Fund. Humboldt County Deputy Public Works Director Hank Seaman said the diversion plan includes strong protections of the Eel River. He described the agreement's benefits.
This agreement would represent securing support from the major Russian River water users to, you know, for their support of PG&E's dam removal as expeditiously as possible. This agreement also represents a strong defense against, you know, other efforts. There's other visions of trying to retain PG&E's dams for the future. And so having an agreement that's really based on a regional collaboration and provides some certainty for Russian River water users is a strong defense against trying to retain the dams. And then having an annual payment, a committed base payment for Eel River restoration is significant. That payment and the terms of the agreement can be a catalyst to try to leverage and deliver some significant investment for Eel River restoration.
Other provisions of the agreement include seasonal limits on diversion, ongoing monitoring of its effects, and a 30-year span allowing for review prior to renewal. Humboldt and regional environmental groups would have preferred an end to diversion, but during a public comment period, Brian Johnson of Trout Unlimited, one of the PAC's signatories, described the advantages of compromise.
We support this knowing full well that many of our members would prefer to just see the diversion go away, and I think would might have liked it if we would have simply fought for dam removal and an end to the diversion. We feel pretty strongly that that's not the right approach. And at first it was, at a minimum, making sure that we had a seat at the table, because not doing so and allowing a water war could easily lead to delay in dam removal, or in a worst case scenario, a diversion that isn't conditioned to protect the Eel River. Along the way, though, we came to believe that the agreement that's before you today is affirmatively good for the Eel River.
Johnson added that scientific rules protect from diversion impacts along with enforceable monitoring, and funding from water leasing will pay for habitat restoration. Also on board is Caltrout, and Charlie Schneider, its regional project manager, said design of the new diversion facility will support fish passage, and he highlighted the restorative justice for the Round Valley Tribe. Friends of the Eel River isn't party to the agreement, but Alicia Heyman, its executive director, said although it includes diversion, its conditions are supportable.
While we are one of those groups that would prefer to see the diversion ended, we feel confident that the flow schedule developed by the technical team will protect habitat in the Eel and sets appropriate seasonal boundaries on the diversion. It's important for the public to know, as Hank mentioned, that the agreement also provides for changes to the diversion schedule. For example, if monitoring shows unexpected adverse effects to the Eel River. And I think that's a really important, you know, element to keep in mind, the flexibility that's built into this agreement. We also appreciate the work that went into ensuring that the WDA is protective of Eel River flows regardless of how PG&E's water rights transfer ends up. We know that there are still some pieces that are up in the air as we move forward. While it is obviously important to protect Eel River flows, opening access once again to the 280 miles of steelhead habitat that is currently locked up behind Scott Dam is probably the single most important restoration action we can take to support the eels' still wild steelhead and give them a real chance at recovery.
Supervisors agreed with the commentary, with Supervisor Mike Wilson saying, even without the agreement, the Eel River dams wouldn't be economically sustainable, but the pact will expedite their removal. That will still take several years to do, and the negotiation process isn't over yet. An agreement with PG&E on decommissioning still has to be forged. Supervisors unanimously voted to approve the agreement, an action that's expected to soon be taken by other parties. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
Community members, tribal leaders, and youth will unite on Saturday, July 26 in Hoopa, California for a Trinity River cleanup and rafting trip project to protect endangered salmon and support indigenous river stewardship. Jordan Pangelinan reports.
Save California Salmon, in partnership with the Hoopa Valley Tribe, youth groups, and the Warrior Institute, invites community members and media to join this year's Trinity River cleanup and raft trip. The event is part of an ongoing effort to protect the health of the river for future generations. Volunteers will help remove trash and debris from key areas along the Trinity River, supporting water quality and the recovery of endangered salmon runs. Speakers will also discuss threats to river, along with the importance of the river to the local tribes. KMUD News spoke with Star Gibbons, the youth coordinator for Save California Salmon, to better understand what the event will entail. Gibbons works to engage youth in community-based activities that foster a deeper connection to the land and raise awareness among residents about the ancestral territories of local indigenous tribes.
So this is an event that we do every year. We like to take the opportunity to really bring youth in the community together to care for the land and then also clean it up and have a good, safe space for people can enjoy the water and also really build that relationship and strengthen, you know, that relationship with the land, the water, and each other on it.
This event will focus on cleaning around the Hoopa Valley, then move forward to the Trinity River. While this is a cleanup, it is also an opportunity for both education on the land as well as talking to the leaders and speakers about how to protect and keep the waters clean.
So with having trash removed and a lot of those unhealthy substances and, you know, like these causing a lot of negative impacts on the water and the fish. And ultimately, like a lot of those things that are getting washed down, those pollutants are getting washed down from the land and in the creeks and getting washed into the river. And it's really affecting the landscape, but also affecting the water quality of where, you know, our communities are fishing and then or they're, you know, down on the water and even just enjoying it as a family and swimming. So where the Trinity River cleanup will be taking place is along the Hoopa Valley. It's for the Hoopa tribal people. And so we will be floating. The cleanup will include a raft trip where we'll be floating down the river while picking up trash and pollutants along the river. And along that stretch, there are the ceremonial grounds and dances that take place. And we try to really focus on making sure those areas are cleaned up. And we also really try to focus on the learning aspect of it. So, you know, we will have speakers coming out. The Hoopa Tribal Chairman, Joe Davis, will be coming out and speaking along with their Rios to Rivers, Danielle Frank will be speaking about the importance of the area, what it means to the, you know, what the water means and the land, clean and healthy water means to the people. And how we want to continue to care for the land and provide a healthy, sustainable life for our future generations.
Gibbons explains that future generations are to inherit this land, and it is a goal for Save California Salmon to ensure that the youth know how to take care of the water. This isn't just for tribal youth, Gibbons says. This event is important for anyone to join or educate themselves.
Yes. So we are very much trying to encourage and implement as many youth activities as possible that is connecting them and building that relationship with the land so that because they are the ones that are going to inherit it. So we want them to be able to know how to take care of it and how to treat the land and know how to provide, you know, healthy, clean water for years to come. And so we really want to encourage youth to participate, to really strengthen that relationship. And so that they will know how to care for it moving forward. So this particular event is for youth and families and really the overall community. You know, we want to strengthen the relationships between our youth, our community, and, you know, the land and water itself. And so this is really open for everyone. We want to encourage participation of entire families coming with their kids and cleaning up the, you know, the surrounding areas and the water.
Since the dam removals, there has been a strong effort to maintain momentum in educating the public about how these changes have impacted both tribal and local waterways. The Trinity River, now a major tributary to the Klamath, has played a key role in the region's recovery. Save California Salmon hopes to continue to spread the message of protecting and preserving these rivers, emphasizing the importance of coming together as community to keep them clean and healthy.
So the Trinity River is one of the largest tributaries to the Klamath River, where the dams have just been have come out and removed. And so we really want to continue to promote the importance of, you know, continuing to have good, healthy flows into, you know, the Trinity and the Klamath. Right now, there are some significant threats to the Trinity River being proposed and kind of moving forward, where they're going to be diverting a larger amounts of water from the Trinity River. And so we really want to be able to share that, those concerns and for not only the Trinity River, but ultimately the Klamath River, because they are kind of one that they go together.
As this annual event returns, one major highlight this year is the participation of the First Descendants Youth Group, who just completed the first source-to-sea journey along the Klamath River, making them the first to travel its full length since the dam removal in 2024. Community members will also hear from speakers and leaders with Rios to Rivers, who will share insights about the significance of this river cleanup and what it means for tribal and local communities to once again have access to these waters after generations of disruption.
With the Trinity River being a large tributary to the Klamath, it's really exciting to be able to offer this opportunity for youth that also that just did that Rios to Rivers Paddle Tribal Waters crew. They will be also joining us on the Trinity, which will be joining in to the Klamath. So it's pretty exciting just because that's a large tributary to the Klamath when they've just did their large descent all the way down that now undammed section of the Klamath River. So that in itself is very significant. It's also really amazing because now that those dams have been removed, our water is healthier and you know, it's becoming a stronger flow for our community. So now that water, that more of that healthier water is getting through, that's more of those salmon that are going to be allowed to swim up the river, which ultimately those salmon do decide to split at the Witchpeck area where the confluence of the Klamath and Trinity River are. And so more salmon for our people, which is amazing.
Gibbons explains that a single decision about these waters can impact not only the tribes whose land it directly affects, but also neighboring communities. Speaking with KMUD, Gibbons emphasized the vital importance of clean water to many of the local tribes in Humboldt County.
I'm Yurok. So in our area, there's the Hoopa tribe, the Yurok tribe, and the Kudup tribe. We're all really close-knitted, and we've run along the Hoopa tribe, runs around the Trinity River, which is a tributary to the Klamath, and the Yurok and the Kuduk are along the Klamath River. So we're all really close, and so the effects to these rivers kind of affects all three of our tribes. We want to work together and build that strength in that community. So our river has been a huge, important aspect of our life for generations and over time. You know, we have counted on the river for our ceremonies. We've counted on our river for one of our large food sources. And so it's a significant part of our lives. We, as Native people, you know, our life is based around water. It's kind of part of our livelihood. So we want to make sure that we are kind of caring for it and tending to it and making sure that for our generations after us, that they'll have that healthy water. And I feel like as a Yurok person, you know, I have a very similar view to a lot of people, the Hoopa and Kuduks, when it comes to, you know, we really want healthy water so that we can continue our ceremonies and that we can continue our traditional fishing and gathering habits. You know, we do a lot of gathering based around the river as well for our making our baskets as well as, you know, our food sustainability and our ceremonies like our boat dances and our jump dances. So they all kind of really tie all together and are part of our identity and who we are as Native people.
The Trinity River is one of California's most vital salmon-bearing waterways, but decades of water diversions and habitat loss have endangered fish populations and impacted tribal communities who depend on the river. This cleanup empowers local residents to take action for their watershed while uplifting indigenous stewardship practices and community resilience. Anyone is invited to join and help clean. Gibbons explains more on the details.
As far as the event, I mean, if there, we want to make sure we welcome everybody. At the beginning of it, we'll start with a valley cleanup up, and that will begin at the Hoopa Tribal Office. And we'll kind of do a valley cleanup, and then after that, and get our t-shirts. We get some awesome t-shirts. And then after that, we'll have lunch and board the rafts and do that along the river, pick up the trash.
The event is this Saturday, July 26th at 9 a.m. It will begin at the Hoopa Tribal Office in Hoopa, California. For information or how to RSVP for the event, you can visit kmud.org for the location, time, and RSVP link. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Jordan Pangelinan.
In National Native News, Antonia Gonzalez reads today's headlines.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Prime Minister Mark Carney recently held a summit with some of Canada's Indigenous leaders to address the issue of laws that allow the fast-tracking of major development projects. Dan Karpinchuk has more.
Carney was trying to ease First Nations fears about the major projects law, but many said it would take more than one meeting to build consensus on Ottawa's plans. Some have already launched a legal challenge against Bill C-5 as well as Ontario's Bill 5. Carney's Bill C-5, also called the Building Canada Act, allows his government to sidestep laws and fast-track approvals for big energy and infrastructure projects that are in the national interest. The summit, attended by hundreds of First Nations leaders, was called after Carney's government faced a backlash from chiefs who said their concerns were not being respected. But he also promised them they would be able to help build the prosperity for their communities for generations to come. The National Chief of the Assembly of First Nations, Cindy Woodhouse-Nepenak, was conciliatory in her assessment of the summit.
We want to stand up for Canada against illegal tariffs. At the same time, of course, we look to make sure that no more colonialism happens within our own country. We push back on that. And just lots of work to do, and I think that we can do that by working together.
Nepenak says the issues will not be settled with one meeting, and she called for more, including a national summit of First Nations leaders with the Prime Minister. Terry Teagee is a regional chief of the British Columbia Assembly of First Nations. He says he's still on the fence.
Still a trust issue in the way the development of the actual legislation. And we see it in British Columbia as well in terms of Bill 1415, is this trust us mentality in this legislation. And as many First Nations know, that we do have trust issues with all levels of government. And that's why we wanted to be included from the start.
Much of the day was spent in panel-style discussions on meaningful consultations and economic prosperity. Carney and his cabinet ministers stayed all day, doing more listening than talking. Some chiefs said they could work with the Prime Minister, while others said they still need more convincing. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Former Navajo Nation President Jonathan Nez declared his second bid for Congress Tuesday, setting up a rematch for a House seat in northeastern Arizona. KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio has more on why Nez is running again.
Before this announcement, Nez admittedly mulled over launching another campaign, aiming to replace his tribal successor, Navajo Nation President Boo Nigrin. The next presidential election takes place in 2026.
Folks from the Navajo Nation wanted us to come home and be their president again. And it was a tough decision. But my family decided, you know, that this is the best way to help bring unity throughout the country. And of course, Congress should look like America.
Nez is vying to become Arizona's first Indigenous congressman. In a statement, his opponent, Republican Congressman Eli Crane, said the Democratic Party has hit rock bottom by letting Nez challenge him again. He lost to Crane last year by a 9% margin, some 36,000 votes, in the state's largest congressional district by size, which is home to more than a dozen federally recognized tribes. For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Pietrazio.
U.S. senators from New Mexico and Colorado have introduced the Tribal Access to Clean Water Act, which invests in tribal water projects. The bill increases funding through the Indian Health Service, the Department of Agriculture, and the Bureau of Reclamation to support water infrastructure and help provide clean water to Native American households that currently lack access. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Larry Lashley, and thanks to our reporters, Jordan Pangelinan, Daniel Mintz, and Antonia Gonzalez. KMA News is online. You can find us on KMA.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kema.org. Redwood Community Radio, Inc. is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Nat Cardos.